Okay. So we've spent time in our first two lessons talking about why we should study the family and the proper attitudes that we have should have towards the family. So now we're going to start getting into the actual discussion of the family. And so we're going to start that discussion by talking about communication. So I'm going to refer to an example that we're all familiar with. Turn over to Genesis chapter 11. Of course, we're all familiar with the story of the Tower of Babel. It says in verse 1, "Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly.' They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.' But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, 'Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech.' So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore, its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth." Obviously, we're not going to be talking about people not being able to communicate because it's different languages. But I think we can understand the point of when we begin to talk about communication. So most divorced individuals point to communication as, if not the most important, but one of the most important failures in their relationship as to why they did not have a happy marriage. They said they would actively listen and try to truly hear what the other person is saying. They would be more open and honest, and they would take time to learn more about their mate rather than assume they knew enough. So we open with the story of the Tower of Babel because communication is obviously key. So imagine at the Tower of Babel, just try to actually think about what happened. Let's say there was a bricklayer who was trying to talk to a mason, and he asked for one thing, but he couldn't understand what the other person said. Obviously, there's going to be a complete breakdown in the building of that tower. And so that's the same idea we see in our relationships, whether it be, now we're going to focus primarily on the husband and the wife, but this is the same for the parent-child, whether you're the child or you're the parent, and same for your brothers and sisters. So that's what we're going to be looking at. If you have that survey that I sent out last week or a couple of weeks ago, and it's okay if you don't, but if you look on page 2 and page 3, these were questions that were presented to both husbands and wives. Row 3, "She doesn't pay attention to what you say and ignores your advice." That was for husbands. And for women, same thing. Row 3, "He doesn't pay attention to what you say and disregard your input." You'll see that women especially listed this as one of the key things that affects their marriage. So to tell someone, let me ask this question. If I say something to you and you hear it, have we communicated? Not necessarily, right? I think we can all understand that just because one person says something and another person hears the words, that doesn't mean we're communicating. I didn't come up with this phrase, but the phrase is, words are the vehicles upon which thoughts travel. So I have a thought, I express it with words, it gets on the bus, and then it comes to you and gets off the bus. Now, whether the thought is actually transferred may or may not be true. So we may hear our spouse, or we may hear our child or our parent, but that doesn't mean that we're communicating. And I think that's pretty common. I think everybody in this room is probably thinking, we've all been in this situation, right? I'm not telling you anything that's revolutionary. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at communication, and then why don't we communicate? So turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 10. We're going to look at an example of miscommunication. Second Samuel 10, verse 1. It happened after this that the king of the people of Ammon died, and Hanan, his son, reigned in his place. Then David said, I will show kindness to Hanan, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness to me. So David sent by the hand of his servants to comfort him concerning his father. And David's servants came into the land of the people of Ammon. And the princes of the people of Ammon said to Hanan their lord, do you think that David really honors your father because he has sent comforters to you? Has David rather sent his servants to you to search the city, to spy it out, and to overthrow it? Therefore Hanan took David's servants, shaved off half their beards, cut off their garments in the middle at their buttocks, and sent them away. What was the problem here? By the way, do you know what happened because of this incident? There was a war. That's what happened. What was at the root of this war? Miscommunication. Miscommunication, right? Oftentimes, husbands and wives end up at war because of miscommunication. They're not understanding what the other person is. Not that they don't understand the words that they're saying, they don't understand what the real problem is. So, if I were to take Jim and put him in one room and take Fred and put him in another room, and I give him a math problem, and I give Jim 3 plus 3, and I give Fred 3 times 3, and I say, okay, you guys, I want you to come up with the answer to this math problem. Well, they're never going to come up with the same answer. It's never going to happen because they're working on different problems. And I can tell you, after almost 30 years of marriage, that's happened to me multiple times. Jennifer and I are working on different problems. I'm not understanding what her real issue is, and maybe she doesn't understand what my real issue is, because we're not communicating. So what are the consequences? Maybe it's not all-out war, right? Maybe there's just a disagreement that just never gets resolved, which just creates a lingering hurt. Maybe it's possible that because of the miscommunication, there's spiteful remarks. Or maybe there are actions that lead to that violent argument. Sometimes we don't communicate and we can't solve it, so we're just despair. We just give up. We just figure, well, this issue just isn't going to get fixed. And then that just seeps into the foundation of your marriage. And those feelings leave both parties wounded. And so it affects things that are completely unrelated to whatever the issue was, because you couldn't communicate. So tell me if you think this is communication. So a wife tells her husband that she would like more attention. Husband, you ever been told that by your wives that they want more attention? So you decide on Saturday, you get up, you go to the florist, and you buy a bouquet of flowers, and you leave it for her on your way to your weekly golf tournament. Problem solved. Or husbands, maybe you tell your wives, hey, you're so busy, we don't have time. I'm not getting the attention, or we're not spending the time together that I want. And so she gets it. She understands. So before you come home from work, she has dinner ready to go. She leaves it for you in the crock pot on her way to whatever kids meeting or PTA or whatever it may be. Are those two people communicating? Look at Proverbs chapter 14. We're going to look at several verses, and we're going to try and make some applications related to communication. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 1. The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. And then turn over to Proverbs chapter 24. Verses 3 and 4. Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. So, how are you building your house? Have you quit building your house because there's a lack of communication? How do you gain wisdom? I mean, there's many ways, but what are some of the ways that you gain wisdom?
Listening.
Listening. How are you going to gain wisdom or knowledge if you're not communicating with your spouse? How are you going to build that house the way that God wants you to build it? Has your house fallen into a state of disrepair over time because of a lack of communication? Have you decided, well, I just give up? Mark chapter 3 and verse 25, a verse we're all familiar with, a house divided itself against itself cannot stand. A husband and a wife cannot build a godly house if they are divided against each other. And your kids are going to see it, and it's going to affect them. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Starting in verse 7. Even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? For if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, who will prepare for battle? So likewise you, unless you utter by the tongue words easy to understand, how will it be known what is spoken? For you will be speaking into the air. There are, it may be, so many kinds of languages in the world, and none of them is without significance. Therefore, if I do not know the meaning of the language, I shall be a foreigner to him who speaks, and he who speaks will be a foreigner to me. Now, this is not the context of, husband and wife is not the context of this verse. I completely understand that. Paul is talking to them about spiritual gifts and speaking in tongues, and if someone speaks and it can't be interpreted, then don't speak. But is it not the same for husbands and wives that many times we're speaking different languages? And therefore, we don't communicate. I mean, how many books can you think of that have been written about the differences between men and women? And language is one of them. What was it years ago? Men are from Venus, men are from Mars, something like women are from Venus, men are from Mars. We understand there's fundamental differences between male and female, and that there are certain ways that are typical, not all, but typical for men and women to communicate. If we're speaking different languages, we're not talking. We're not communicating. So let me ask you this. Do you know your mate's language? Do you know your mate? And if you were to ask your mate, do you know me? If they gave an honest answer, what would it be? I think mine would be sometimes. Most of the time, I think Jennifer and I know what the other one is saying. Last night we had a conversation we didn't. We weren't speaking the same language. Because here's the thing, it's not like you learn a language and now you're fluent. If I learn Spanish, I can understand when someone speaks Spanish. No. The language between husband and wife is an ongoing learning. You always are trying to understand what your mate is saying. It's not always easy. And sometimes they're not communicating. Sometimes either, whether it be you or them, you're not communicating the real issue. What you're saying isn't really conveying what the problem is. So my question is, thinking about your family, how would you describe the communication in your family? Is it peaceful? Is it tumultuous? Is it divisive? Is it unifying? How does your family interact? Do you think your family members really understand you? And now I'm asking not just husband and wife, but parent and child. Rod.
Well, just to build on the comments you're making, or the point you're making, something that Lawan and I learned, and I guess I understood this intellectually, but I didn't really understand it well, was you come from different environments. And what is a way of communicating in one family is not necessarily the same in the other family. And frankly, the first several weeks of our marriage, we were were not communicating well at all. I mean, we were extreme, and it wasn't because anyone, neither of us, was not wanting to communicate, but we just had different ways. We approached it much, much differently. I appreciate you saying it's a work in progress, because she's still learning.
You're right, though, and I appreciate that, because you're right. Communication is not something that is necessarily inherent to us, and it's all, I mean, engaging with one another, I believe, is instinctual, but effective communication may not be something that's instinctual to all of us. And even if it is, if you learn to communicate, like you say, in a certain way, growing up in your house, there may be one way of communicating. Your spouse may have a totally different approach. It may be night and day as to how you communicate. But to have an effective marriage, you have to learn to speak a common language. So, why don't people communicate? That's where we're going to spend some time. So, if you remember, when we looked at the survey, when we first started out, what was the number one thing spouses, both men and women, understand was a key to improving their marriage? The number one thing husband and wives said that it will improve their marriage is for them to work on themselves. And I think we would all agree. It is very frustrating to try and change your spouse, but it's also very, it takes humility to admit you need to work on yourself. But I think if we're all being honest with ourselves, we understand that is the best way to improve our marriage, is to work on ourselves. So look at Proverbs chapter 11. Verse 13, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. So, what kind of person are you willing to pour your heart out to? Your fears, desires, concerns, anxieties, what kind of person are you going to share that with? Based on this verse? Somebody that's going to keep it, right? Someone that's not going to go around telling it to everybody. Someone you can trust. As a spouse, are you trustworthy with that type of information? There is no tighter bond on this earth between two people than husband and wife. Can your mate trust you? Can they tell you things they would never tell anyone else and believe that you're not going to share it? Look at Proverbs chapter 25. What happens when you share your innermost fears or concerns or thoughts? What does that make you? Vulnerable. Can you be vulnerable with your spouse? Are you comfortable with that? Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 9. Debate your case with your neighbor and do not disclose the secret to another. Does this not also apply to your spouse? Now, does that mean that we never talk to other people about our marriage? No. I mean, you look at, for example, in Matthew chapter 18 and verse 15 following, there are times when there may be sin or hypocrisy or abuse or whatever. There are times that it is okay to reveal certain things. And I'm not saying that you can't seek counsel for your marriage. What I'm talking about is sharing intimate details of your relationship without just cause. Can your spouse trust you? That's one reason some marriages don't work, is because the one party or both just can't trust each other with the information. They can't allow themselves to be vulnerable because they know that whatever they say is going to be known. And so they just don't communicate. Look at Proverbs chapter 15. Verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. How do we respond to something that we don't like to hear from our spouse? Do we, for lack of a better term, use a hammer to kill a fly in our response? Are we very quick to respond with anger? What if somebody comes up and jabs you with a sharp stick? Does that feel good? Is that how we talk to our mate? So what do you think that person's going to do the next time? Probably just not going to talk to you. Probably just not going to communicate. Look at Proverbs chapter 12. Now, Jennifer and I kind of have this, not a rule, but something we try to abide by. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. If there's a disagreement and it gets emotional, one person in the argument has to be the calm one. Somebody has to stay calm. If I'm upset, she can't respond by escalating. If she comes to me and she's upset, I have to be the calm one. Because if we both get emotional, it just ratchets it up. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. So which one are you? Are you the piercing sword, like we talked about? You poke your partner? Or are you promoting peace? Here's the thing. When you say something harsh, it never, ever goes away completely. You can apologize, you can be forgiven, but it never disappears completely. So when you say something rash, or you say something extreme in the heat of the moment, you can work it out, but there's a scar there. Look at Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 19. Wives, submit to your own husbands. 19. Husbands, love your wives. Do not be bitter toward them. Or actually, the ESV says, do not be harsh with them. I'm just going to use some generalities here, so please don't accuse me of being completely stereotypical. Men typically are more black and white. They're not as sensitive as women. When we deal in the workplace, depending on what the situation is, we may interact with other men very black and white, very direct, very blunt, and that's okay. But women typically are different. We have to learn how to communicate, to speak their language. So when we come across and we think we're just communicating information, we're just being direct, we're just telling you how it is, sometimes you have to be careful how you tell them how it is. You're not communicating. You think you're just talking, men. But the wives are perceiving that completely different. They're seeing that as aggressive. They're seeing that as something that is unwelcome. It's in their face. Look at Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 28. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. Again, turn over to chapter 21 of Proverbs. In verse 23, whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. Have all of us been right here? Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. Have you ever walked away from a situation and been like, man, if I had just kept my mouth shut. If I just hadn't opened my mouth. I've been there. I've been there with Jennifer. I've been there with my boys. If I'd have just guarded my tongue. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 11. A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. I am angry, and I'm going to let you know I'm angry, and I'm going to let you know exactly how I feel. And man, you just get it out there. Volcano. Blah. Here it is, all of it. Unfiltered. I am mad. And usually when we're mad, we feel we're justified, right? I don't know if we want to call it righteous anger, but we feel justified in our anger. And so, man, you pour out that anger, and then it's there. A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. Are you someone who's prone to lose their temper? Will that impact your ability to communicate with your spouse or your child or your parent? Look at Job chapter 19. Job chapter 19 and verse 1. Then Job answered and said, "How long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? These 10 times you have reproached me. You are not ashamed that you have wronged me." Why was Job so emotional? He's talking to his friends. Why did he feel that way? Nobody knows. Dusty, we're going to need to restart Job next week. Britt?
Lost his entire family, everything he had, and they all blamed it on him.
He's being falsely accused. Do you like being falsely accused? Have you ever had a situation where someone, maybe your spouse, maybe your child, maybe your parent, has built up in their mind an entire, what we call a straw man, just like with Job? His friends had it all figured out. They knew exactly what was going on. They knew why Job was in the wrong. They knew Job was a sinner. They knew he was trying to cover it up. Have you ever been falsely accused by your spouse? Let's build on this idea a little bit. Look over in Leviticus chapter 19. Starting in verse 35, "You shall do no injustice in judgment, in measurement of length, weight, or volume. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, and an honest hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe all my statutes and all my judgments and perform them. I am the Lord." If you look back to verse 15 in the same chapter, "You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor." And there's other verses we could turn to. God has always been, from even with the time of the Jews, even before, to judge fairly. To have one standard of judgment. This is talking about in business or commerce at the last part of the chapter. But in verse 15, it's even more to the idea of how we judge people. What is the standard that we use? Look over in 1 Peter chapter 3. 10 says, for he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and lips from speaking deceit. So when we're dealing with our spouse, do we judge them the same way we judge ourselves? Are we being fair in our judgment? Do we have one standard for them and one standard for us? So when you have that disagreement or you have that issue with your spouse, are you judging them the same way you expect to be judged? It's emotional dishonesty if you're not. And it's more difficult than you may think. It is one of the hardest things, I believe, for people to do is be emotionally honest with themselves. And to judge by the same standard that they're using. And there's no other person you're going to interact more with, hopefully, in your life than your spouse. So these types of issues are going to arise all the time. Look at Proverbs chapter 26. Proverbs 26, verse 12. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. So what's the difference in being confident that you made a wise decision and the man in this text? Should we be confident if we make a good decision? Or can we be confident that we made a good decision? And what's the difference between the person in this text? Britt.
He never makes a wrong decision.
Right. Because he's wise in his own eyes. He's wise in his own eyes. Do we ever recognize that we make bad decisions? Billy? I think your point is well made. If you go back to the origin of so much of sin, it is pride. It's pride. So in a situation like this, as the man, as the head of the household, if he's, I would say this man, the fool is conceited. He thinks too much of himself. So if you have a man in the relationship who always knows the best answer, Is the wife going to talk to him? Is she going to continue to provide her input?
Hey, Joel.
Yeah.
So, take your boss. In my experience in dealing with some folks that we've had to have coaching conversations with regards to being wise in your own eyes, 9 times out of 10, it's because they're insecure. That the reality is, for whatever reason, it could have started when they were a young child, whatever, and they always felt like they never got the approval from mom and dad, never got the approval from everybody else. They grew up in this way of being arrogant, know-it-alls, because they are so incredibly insecure in their own skin. And so, when we have that situation, and I can speak to that myself, that was me, okay? When I was 20-something, I knew everything, right? I knew everything about everything.
Right there with you.
And so we can call it pride, we can call it whatever, but at the end of the day, it came from this insecurity that I felt like I had to constantly prove myself to everybody, including my spouse. When we see that behavior in others, whether it's with our children, whether it's with our spouse, whether it's with our friends, whether it's with our neighbor. We have to have the presence of mind to sit back and try to build them, edify them in a way to try to overcome that. Because it gets really, really hard for somebody who is that insecure. And we see it all the time in theater, right? The theater kids that upstage the other ones, they're the ones that are the most insecure, the ones that are most confident in their abilities, get upstaged by the ones that aren't, right? And we see this constantly over and over again. So,
I think you're right. A lot of times the root of it is insecurity. You're right. And unfortunately, it leaves the mate in the relationship to where they don't want to communicate. On the survey that was sent out, the number one answer by women for things that cause problems in their relationship is he doesn't pay attention to what you say and disregards your input. And whether the husband is doing that because he's conceited, because he's insecure, whatever the reason may be, he's proud. If you learn over time by a pattern of behavior that if you talk to your spouse and they don't listen to your input, what are you going to eventually do? Stop wasting your breath. You're going to stop wasting your breath. So, what's interesting is if you look in Proverbs chapter 28, in verse 13, it says, "He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy." Husbands and wives, do you ever say, "I was wrong? I made a mistake. I didn't handle that properly"? Do you ever tell your children, "I made a mistake. I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that"? Because here's the thing. If you tend to use those words, most times you're not going to be reciprocated with anger or emotion. It's going to be mercy. I understand. Because they make mistakes too. So instead of holding on to your "I'm wrong" or "I'm sorry" or "I didn't handle that properly" or "I should have listened to you, I should have made a better decision," if you actually say those and express those words to your spouse, more than likely it's going to be met with mercy. But if that's not something that you're in the pattern of behavior, it's difficult to start. The first one is the hardest. Dusty. That's true. That's a good point. We're at the end of our time. So we're going to stop here for this morning. Definitely appreciate your attentiveness and your comments. And we'll pick up Matthew chapter 7 next week. Thank you.